Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Cast of Kings, an unofficial recap podcast about the HBO original series Game of Thrones and the upcoming HBO original series House of the Dragon, which is debuting on August 21st. I am David Chen, and I haven't read most of the books in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire, and typically I'm joined by a Game of Thrones expert, Joanna Robinson, to discuss Game of Thrones. But as you probably know, Joanna Robinson is now podcasting about Game of Thrones over at the Ringerverse podcast. Be sure to check her out there. But A Cast of Kings is going to be continuing, and I am so thrilled to announce that I have a new co-host for this podcast. Kim Renfro is the entertainment reporter at Insider and the author of the unofficial guide to Game of Thrones. Kim Renfro, thanks for being the new co-host of A Cast of Kings. Welcome.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me be your co-host. I'm so excited to be covering this show with you.
Yes, we are so excited to have you. And for those who don't know, Kim Renfro is, in my opinion, one of the foremost Game of Thronesologists on the internet. She's somebody whose work that Joanna and I used as a resource when we were recording A Cast of Kings, especially in our earlier years. And we were so impressed with her. And also, if I was going to continue this podcast, A Cast of Kings, I knew I needed to have somebody who was going to be able to tell me everything that's going on, because I'd probably have no sense of who any of these people are or what they're doing. And Kim Renfro is the person that's going to guide us through that. So Kim, we're so grateful that you signed on for this task and are going to help us walk through all the stuff in House of the Dragon. So here is what we're going to do on this episode. Our timing for this episode is a little bit off, because I asked Kim to come to this episode and prepare general notes around everything we know about House of the Dragon, you know, like who are the main players and what's it going to be like and what are our speculations and so on. In the last 24 hours, a bunch of new information about House of the Dragon has dropped. There's been an Entertainment Weekly story. There's a trailer. And so what we're going to do is we're going to record this episode as we were planning on it anyway. And we're going to talk about what we're looking forward to with House of the Dragon and so on. And what we think is going to be involved. Then we're going to consume all that information, watch the new trailer, read the new story, and so on. And we're going to record another episode that's going to publish in the next 48 hours, where we're going to break down all the new information that we know. So if you want to be kept up to the latest information about House of the Dragon, be sure to subscribe to this podcast, GameOfThronesPodcast.com, or wherever your podcast can be found. But yeah, that is the plan for this week's episode. Now, before we get to any of that, let's get to know Kim Renfro a little bit better. Now, Kim, you are the entertainment reporter at Insider who's writing mostly about Game of Thrones, but this was not always your job. How did you come to become the Game of Thrones expert at Insider?
Yeah, great question. In truth, it was a total fluke. And I'm so excited that I was able to build this career. I actually, like, the order of operations might be different than some people think. I didn't become a journalist and then get assigned Game of Thrones as, like, my beat. I was actually a fan first, with no intention of entering this industry. I first learned about Game of Thrones and A Song of Ice and Fire, as a lot of people did, in 2011, when the HBO adaptation was set to premiere. Some bros at a house party were chatting with me over some beers about Lord of the Rings, as you do. And when they saw, like, how into Lord of the Rings I was, they were like, oh, well, like, you have to check out A Song of Ice and Fire. So I did. I watched the pilot episode, was completely hooked. I can be a little bit of a book snob in that, like, generally I prefer the original text to whatever adaptation is being made. So I didn't watch any more of the show until I went and bought, at that point, only the first four books were out, because A Dance with Dragons came out that summer. So bought the first four books, like, blew through them. I had not loved a fantasy series like that in a really, really long time. It was honestly thrilling to read those books for the first time through. And that happened to coincide with when I also got into Reddit. I think I made my Reddit account in 2012 or something. And Reddit was also, like, just completely blew my mind with how much of, like, a resource of information it was. And so, of course, I found the A Song of Ice and Fire subreddit, which I have since learned, I don't know if you knew this, that they pronounce it Aswaf.
Nice.
I was like, I've always just said A-S-O-I-A-F, which is a mouthful, but Aswaf really rolls off the tongue.
Can I veto Aswaf as a thing that we say on the podcast? Is that okay?
Yes. I will never utter that word again. I promise.
Usually I'm all for abbreviations, but let's just say A Song of Ice and Fire on the podcast.
That sounds great, Dave. I will power through. So yeah, so I, as I was reading the A Song of Ice and Fire subreddit, I just like got really into all the fan theories, the book analysis. I was like rereading the books, just super obsessed. So then flash forward to 2014, I graduated college. I had been working as a counter staff at a bakery for most of that time. And I just wanted any job that would honestly give me like health insurance and $45,000 a year was my goals. So I went to a temp agency. They actually placed me as an office assistant at what was then just called Business Insider. That office assistant job became permanent. I was in charge of like restocking the kitchen, delivering mail, setting up computers and phones, kind of like a generalist administrative worker. And by nature of that job, I got to know everybody at the company because I had to, you know, I had to know what they looked like to put their mail on their desk or whatever. And I was chatting with an editor one day about the latest episode of Game of Thrones. This was sometime in season 4. And, you know, 20 minutes into me going off on tangents about like fan theories and this change and like, oh, they left out this character. Oh, I think they're going to do this. He was literally like, why do you know so much about this show? And I was like, oh, great question. I just do. I'm a big fan. And he invited me to write an article about the show. He was like, we don't have anyone who's really covering it right now. And it's obviously such a big phenomenon back in season 4. So I did. I wound up, you know, on the weekends putting together articles and sending them over to him. And that eventually I asked if they would let me transition into being a full-time reporter. And they did. And so Game of Thrones was really the only reason why I have the job I have today. And that's really awesome and was totally unexpected.
Incredible story. You know, you basically did the modern equivalent of working your way up from the mailroom, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And let it be said that, hey, there are sometimes career advantages to sharing your fandoms with coworkers. You know, if you hadn't said anything, you might not be where you are today.
That is so true.
Yeah, you went from a temp at Insider to becoming a reporter to the author of The Unofficial Guide to Game of Thrones, which is an extraordinary journey. And now, obviously, the apex of your career, co-host of A Cast of Kings, right?
Mm-hmm. This is the top of the mountain. Where
you're just looking down from here. It's all downhill from here after this, you know? There's nothing higher.
It's appreciating the view.
So, before we get into our House of the Dragon preview, I do need to ask you about your thoughts on what's happened since Game of Thrones ended. Now, you and me both dedicated a significant portion of our lives to covering Game of Thrones. I will tell you that from my perspective, the ending of Game of Thrones was crushingly disappointing. Literally just the final two episodes. Felt like they needed an additional 4, 5, 6 episodes to cover all the stuff that they tried to cram into there. And I really didn't love it, and it left me feeling really sour and burned on the show and not sure if I would ever really return. And before we get into why one might want to look forward to House of the Dragon, what was your reaction to how Game of Thrones ended?
Yeah, it was messy. It's like the best word I can think to explain. It was like, I don't think I would categorize myself as crushingly disappointed as you were. And I'm so sorry that happened to you. It was a tough time. But
yes.
For me, it was more of a mixed bag. Like there were things I liked about the final season and those final two episodes. There were also some things that just like flat out confused me or left me feeling really just like bummed and like a little bit shortchanged for some character arcs and some character development that I was hoping for at the end there. And I don't like, it was just very surreal. I don't think that I've ever been this plugged into a fandom for a show that's this big and that ended so intensely divisively. Like, it was a rough go of things. And so like in the years since, it's like, you know, hindsight can be 20/20 or whatever. Like I can kind of get my arms around the big picture of like the cultural impact of Game of Thrones. I tend to not agree with the people who are like, oh, nobody ever talks about Game of Thrones again. This is like you know, they erase themselves from the planet Earth. Like, you saying that is you talking about it, bro. Like, just so you know, like, mm-hmm. you're mm-hmm. the one who brought up Game of Thrones in that tweet. So I don't know. It's complicated for sure. But I'm mm-hmm. now we're, you know, it's 3 years later. We know so much about like these prequels and spinoff plans. And I think it's like, it seems like a good time to sort of do a reset of like, okay, what is it that was like the big draw to these characters in the show? Can they recreate that magic with like great casting, you know, way more CGI dragons? I'm open and a little more optimistic about what this next phase of Westeros-based content will look like.
Put a different way, Kim, are you ready to be hurt again?
I'm trying to make myself ready for anything. I'm ready to feel joy, and I'm ready to be hurt.
All right, me too. Well, let's get into it. Let's talk about House of the Dragon and what we can expect from the upcoming prequel series. Kim Renfro, I know very little about what's going on in House of the Dragon, except that it takes place roughly 200 years before the events of Game of Thrones. Is that right?
That is correct. Approximately, yes.
So what do you expect the show will cover? And why do you think it might be interesting, if you do think it might be interesting?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think it will be interesting. It's a really fascinating route that they've decided to go with this first successor show, as George R. R. Martin likes to call them. For lack of a better word, I just refer to it as a prequel, because that's what it is. It looks like...
Yes, I concur with that assessment, yes.
Based on all of the casting that we've seen, and you know, HBO's confirmed, I think, something like a dozen, maybe more characters so far, it looks like they are choosing to start with what is known as the Dance of the Dragons. And that is a really epic and bloody Targaryen civil war that effectively marked like the beginning of the end of House Targaryen being the superpower that they were in Westeros for so long. So this is like the height of their political power, but also their literal dragon power. In Game of Thrones, you know, we had Daenerys and her three dragons. In House of the Dragon, virtually every Targaryen character that you meet has their own dragon, if not more than one. And there was basically a really...
There's a dragon surplus at the time, basically.
There, a dragon surplus. And also,
a dragon
like,
glut. You
know? Exactly. So it looks like they're going to start there. And what's super interesting, and what I think people might appreciate if you ever got caught up in the Game of Thrones back and forth between like show and books and what was canon in George R. R. Martin's universe versus what HBO was changing and kind of making their own. There's no risk of that with this series, because while it is based on a book, it's based on Fire and Blood Volume 1, which George R. R. Martin put out a few years back. And that book is not a novel. Like, it's not a series of novels in the way that A Song of Ice and Fire was, where every chapter was told by the perspective of a character. So like, you're really in their heads, you're getting all the dialogue and the details. Fire and Blood is instead written like it's a history book, but it's like a few different accounts of what happened. And so, as we all know with history in the real world, there are a lot of biases baked into the narrative that gets told, you know, hundreds of years after the fact, or even contemporaneously. Some of the people who are writing down these facts might be loyal to one house or the other. And so there is no strict, like, known canon plot line of what happened in A Dance with Dragons. There's just like loose big events that we know. And then it kind of is leaving it up to the showrunners and the writers' room had a lot more leeway to fill in those blanks or to create their own sort of like weaving of a storyline. So I think that that's a pretty cool opportunity. And I think that that might tamp down the potential for like just nonstop comparisons between the books and the show.
Yeah. So just so I understand what you're saying, right? The original Song of Ice and Fire, the Game of Thrones books on which the show was based, were novel-like. They told them each chapter from the perspective of a character. Whereas Fire and Blood, on which House of the Dragon is based, is like a history book. It sounds like it's like kind of like the Bible almost, right? Like where mm-hmm. it's like multiple different accounts And told, I guess, third person and theoretically dispassionately, as opposed to like a very subjective viewpoint. Is that right?
Yeah, it honestly kind of depends. There's like one of the characters who's writing down the accounts is a guy named Mushroom, like, you know, just your average normal Game of Thrones name, who was sort of like a court jester, mm-hmm. who it seems like a lot of people didn't think very much of and therefore spoke very candidly in front of him a lot. And so like he has this sort of like behind the scenes like perspective on like the drama that's happening. And then the other parts of the history are written down by a Septon. And so that's the more like, oh, I'm being a little bit more austere, like I'm recording.
But they know they're writing for like a history book. Is that yes. is that what the premise? Whereas yes. like when you're reading A Song of Ice and Fire, it's not like they're necessarily writing for a history book. Is that's accurate, right?
Right. You are experiencing the events through the minds of the characters as it's happening. So yeah, that's a little bit different.
Yeah. And so basically there's probably a lot more leeway in terms of what the showrunners can do in carving out the story. Now, I would argue they probably had a lot of leeway in the original Game of Thrones as well, because several of the books that the seasons were based off were not completed, right?
That is still true.
To this day is still the case. To this day is still the case. So, but they'll whatever constraints they had on them have now been cast off, right? They mm-hmm. can go completely wild. So, so it's interesting to go back to this time when there are dragons everywhere. Curious how they're going to execute that and talk about that society, and also from a CG budget perspective, how they're going to like make that come to life. But when we saw dragons in the original Game of Thrones, they were incredibly formidable creatures. So the idea that like everyone has a dragon in this one, it's going to feel like a completely different era of this time in a very palpable way. Yes.
Yes, completely. I'm sure everyone remembers from Game of Thrones, the dragon pit, which was the location for a bunch of pivotal scenes, like the negotiations between Daenerys and Cersei. The dragon pit in the era of House of the Dragon will be like fully intact and actually full of dragons. Like it literally is. Mm. It's like, imagine like a dog kennel, but massive and with right. fire breathing dragons.
It's like, when you saw in Game of Thrones, it's like the remains of the Roman Colosseum. We're in the House of the Dragon. We're going to see the Colosseum in full force pretty much.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's cool. That's exciting. Now, the Targaryens, obviously they were in power, it sounds like, for a very long time before they were unseated. How were they thought of before they were removed from power?
Yeah, so when, again, what we're assuming is when House of the Dragon starts, it's going to be the rule of King Viserys, which you might recognize that name. That's the name that eventually was passed on to Daenerys' brother in the Game of Thrones series. But this is obviously a far different character. It's one of their ancestors. So King Viserys takes over the throne.
A little confusing, I have to say, but you know, for a casual person, but yes. And it's pronounced Viserys. Like, I always pronounce it Viserys.
Viserys?
You said Viserys, I think?
Oh, Viserys.
It's the same word, basically. It's yes. not like a different name. Okay.
Yes, on. Viserys.
So it's a different dude, same name as Daenerys' brother.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The Targaryens, really. I love... My forever like favorite tweet from Game of Thrones era was when we found out that Jon Snow's real name was Aegon, and someone tweeted like, the poor Targaryens, they have just the one name and the one wig. That's it. Is the name Aegon and that one short blonde wig that they mm-hmm. all have to share. There mm-hmm. is another Aegon. So yeah, so King Viserys, who we will meet in the House of the Dragon, has taken over from his father. The king before him was a very long reigning king over, as far as I understand it, like everyone was pretty happy with what was happening. The only hiccup that we start seeing with this era is that Viserys wants his successor to be his daughter, his firstborn child, his only daughter, whose name is Rhaenyra. And so that is where they start kind of like messing with the standard order of operations, so to say. And then that is what kind of kicks off the civil war, is that like after King Viserys dies, the Targaryens cannot agree on who they believe should now ascend the Iron Throne. And so the fallout from that, obviously, in the same way that we saw with with the wars, the War of the Five Kings that happened in Game of Thrones, is, you know, people die who had nothing to do with this. And also you have the dragon element. And so, again, we saw in Game of Thrones the way that dragons can inflict a lot of terror upon smaller communities or regular small folk in towns and stuff. And so some of the Targaryens are not afraid of using that dragon fire to their advantage, and unfortunately to the woe of the people.
What we knew from Game of Thrones, the original series, is that, like, in the events immediately prior to Game of Thrones, King Aerys the Second Targaryen, also called the Mad King, was on the throne and was removed by, was it Jaime Lannister assassinating him? Am I right about that?
Yep.
So whatever happens with the Civil War, we know that King Aerys Targaryen is going to be the one that ends up on the throne, basically. Yes? Is that
right?
Is that fair to say? Or is there a bunch more stuff in between there that I'm not acknowledging?
Oh, there's a lot more. Yeah. There's a couple generations at least between that. But yes. So, like, what I mean when I mentioned at the start that this is like the beginning of the end, it's like this is the Targaryens basically kind of starting to like eat each other alive, to the point that the incest gets to be too much, because again, there are only so many generations that you can probably have brothers and sisters married and reproducing before. I mean, we're told within the universe, you know, that the Mad King seems to have been an unwell man on several levels. And so, yeah, like, we know that Targaryens will continue to rule. But I think one of the key things is that when you have dragons fighting dragons, a lot of them are going to die. Dragons are very hard to kill, I think, if you're an average, you know, soldier on the ground. But if you have two massive dragons, again, as we kind of saw with like the Night King, when he finally acquired a dragon in that for that final battle, dragons can do damage to each other pretty well. And so we start to see kind of like the beginning of what will lead to someone like the Mad King being on the throne and being like crazed with trying to maintain some semblance of power, but without dragons behind them now, and without this like magical sense of rule. Instead, now it's just ruling by cruelty.
Yeah, interesting. And has the lineage of kings already been established and codified between Viserys all the way down to the Mad King? I guess I'm curious, like, we already kind of know what the outcome of the Civil War is going to be.
Yes. Yeah. If anyone doesn't mind spoilers and wants to, they can basically read a full summary of what.
Given that that's the case that, like, we already kind of know the outcome, or you know the outcome, you know, people who read the books know the outcome. I guess I'm curious, like, that doesn't mean that the show is not worth watching, obviously. There's other things that you are probably interested to find out. But since you already know what the ending of the battle is, like, what are you interested to see in terms of this Civil War and how it unfolds?
I'm certainly just interested to see what, like, what the royal court was like at the height of Targaryen power. Because again, we've only really seen in depth Robert Baratheon's rule, which was disastrous to say the least, at the end there. And then obviously, like, the cycle of King Joffrey and all of the infighting. We haven't really seen a like capable and strong king ruling Westeros, or like what those dynamics look like. Mm-hmm. What do small council meetings look like when it's not just like usurpers everywhere? Although that eventually, you know, will start to happen in this story. So just seeing, and again, like in Game of Thrones, we really only had Daenerys, and for you know, a fair few episodes, I want to say 6 or 7 episodes until her brother was killed. It was not very Targaryen heavy, and the Targaryens are a very interesting and fascinating lineage of people in this fictional universe. And so I think just getting to see them in action more, and again, like riding dragons, bonding to dragons, hatching more dragons. Plus, like, I think that this is the perfect kind of show that has the opportunity to do more world building and more like lore drops, which like I love. I don't know, like, even in the trailer I noticed that one of the characters is holding the Catspaw dagger, which is the dagger that we know will eventually kill the Night King in the canon of the HBO universe. And we knew that that blade was a Targaryen weapon because it's made out of dragonglass, the same metal, or the hilt is made of dragonglass and the blade is Valyrian steel. And it's just kind of cool that like, oh, right. Like all of these objects that carry a lot of like mythology with them that we got glimpses of in the Game of Thrones series, we might be able to see those again and get more tidbits about like how they were made, who were they passed on from, more, you know, swords. I love a good badass sword. So, you know, we've got more like Valyrian steel swords to meet and kind of like, just I think more of the magic and the lore and the mythology that I always really loved about Game of Thrones, but wasn't always heavily included in the show, in the original show. But they might go kind of deep with that, and I'm excited about possibly seeing that.
That's interesting. I think season one of Game of Thrones is one of my favorites, and a big part of that was because it focused really heavily on palace intrigue. It was a lot of people in rooms just talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was partially out of necessity, right? Because they barely knew what they were doing back then when it came to the show, from what I could tell from reading about it. And they probably didn't have that big of a budget.
Yeah.
Now, Game of Thrones has been one of the biggest pop culture phenomenons of all time. And they probably have sort of a lot of creative control and a lot more resources to sketch out a vision of what they want. On that note, by the way, we should point out that the showrunners of the original Game of Thrones are no longer showrunning this one, right?
Right.
It's Miguel Sapochnik, is that right?
Yeah. So David Benioff and D.B. Weiss were never involved in this spinoff, as far as I know. It's Miguel Sapochnik who first entered our Game of Thrones universe in season 5. He directed 2 back-to-back episodes, one of which was Hard Home, which is one of my favorite episodes in the whole series.
Yeah.
And then he went on to do like Battle of the Bastards, the final battle at Winterfell, the Winds of Winter episode, which was the season 6 finale with the wildfire explosion.
Yeah.
The Sept of
Incredible
Baelor.
Episode. Basically, like, he's made some of the best episodes of all time, right?
Exactly. And so he is co-showrunner, and we know that he directed at least the pilot, if not a couple more episodes in the season. So I almost think of it as like, have you seen Mindhunter on Netflix?
I haven't, but I've heard it's awesome.
I love it. And it's like David Fincher directed the first episode, but not all of the subsequent ones. But like he like got to basically set the tone for the show by doing that pilot. And so I think that it was like a similar thing that's happening here with Miguel Sapochnik acting as co-showrunner and director. And then his partner is Ryan Condal, who created a series called Colony. And he apparently he's had a relationship with George R. R. Martin for a while now. George speaks very highly of him in all of his like blog posts and stuff, and says that he's a phenomenal writer and that he has every belief that this show will be fantastic in his hands. So, yeah. And then they have a team of writers too. So it's not just like 2 dudes. There are a lot of people involved.
Right, right.
But I think that we're actually getting 2 different women directors and at least 2 women writers in the writer's room for this one.
But suffice to say, the creative team is different, but yeah, like the circumstances under which the show are debuting are also very different than when Game of Thrones season 1 debuted, you know? And I think it will be interesting to see. My hope is that they'll have like a little bit more confidence in terms of what they're trying to achieve. Then I felt like, I think they were still kind of finding the show in seasons 1 and 2, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so hopefully, we'll see something a little bit more fully developed. They've also had, you know, several years to work on it. And so I'm hopeful that it will be kind of an interesting dynamic when it comes to what it is like to see Viserys Targaryen rule. Let's talk about some of the houses that might be involved. So you've already mentioned the Targaryens, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know they're definitely in it. Who else do we know is definitely going to be in House of the Dragon?
So the second pretty key house is House Valyrian. Valyrian. Someone can correct me on that if I'm pronouncing that wrong. But they are another house that came from Valyria, which is across the Narrow Sea. They're sort of like they have always been very close to the Targaryen family. And so we're getting multiple folks from House Valyrian, and they are also, I believe, dragon riders. And so that's pretty cool.
Did we see any of the Valyrians in Game of Thrones?
Not that I know of.
Yeah,
I'm
so
pretty
they were
sure.
Just like people who would like they were part of the previous lore, but we never really met anyone from like House Velaryon
yeah.
in Game of Thrones. Right?
I don't think so. Again, please, anyone out there, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But no, I think House of the Dragon will mostly be introducing us to newer house names that we either like maybe got an aside mention of in the original show. Okay, so we know the Hand of the King to Viserys is a man named Otto Hightower. And so the Hightower is like, that wasn't a surname that we heard in Game of Thrones, but they're connected because Wiki of Ice and Fire helpfully tells us that Margaery Tyrell. So the Tyrells who ruled the Reach, we all know Margaery, obviously. She married Renly Baratheon. She became queen for a brief respite before
Cersei blew her up. A wonderful time of her being queen. About like 10 minutes or something like that.
I loved Margaery.
Yeah, she was great. She's great.
So she's descended from the Hightowers. There's like, the thing that's interesting is that in the same way that like maiden names eventually kind of like die out, it's like there are lesser houses that over the centuries got sort of like blended or name slightly changed. So yeah.
And so the Hightowers would be one of those basically.
Yeah.
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 So we saw, you know, Margaery from the Hightowers, but other than that, there weren't a ton of Hightower characters in the Game of Thrones.
No.
Yeah.
Not in the HBO show.
But you anticipate the Hightowers and Valyrians will be part of House of the Dragon, right?
Definitely, because we know that those roles have been cast. And then who else have we got?
Lannisters, I think.
Yeah,
right?
there's at least one Lannister that we know has been cast. And then I don't know. Again, like, it'll be interesting to see how they decide to pace it. So far, we only know that they've got the green light for one season, 10 episodes. And it's like, I can see a universe where they do the entire Civil War story in 10 episodes, but I can also see one where, like, they really take their time with it and, like, really flesh out all of, like, the minute twists and turns throughout this battle. And, like, because I think it also stretches like about 25 years from start to finish. And so maybe they wrote it in a way that like they're going to pace it a lot more slowly. But if they do try and kind of like sprint to the end there, we could see Starks come into the play, some of the ancestors of House Stark, because they enter in this fictional tale right after the Dance with Dragons is over. I think the next chapter is literally called Hour of the Wolf, which is pretty cool. So...
gotcha.
Yeah.
So Hightowers, Valyrians, Lannisters, they're all going to be in the mix somehow with House of the Dragon, along with the Targaryens.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume we'll like learn more about them, their characteristics. Maybe they might be different from the books. But is it safe to assume that there's going to be some intense tensions between them? Some potentially longing for the throne that might go unfulfilled by some of these characters? Is that fair to say? Or
yeah, or at least like it's like the backing of one side or the other. So what we'll see in the Civil War is that it's not just Targaryens fighting Targaryens. Like they each have kind of built up their allies, almost in the same way that we saw like the Starks and the Lannisters kind of going after the support of different houses. We'll see some, you know, siding with one or the other. Oh, also Dorne is present throughout all of this. So we might revisit Dorne a little bit.
Pretty terrible storyline in the original Game of Thrones, if I recall correctly.
Maybe.
Kind of wasted, if I recall.
Maybe we'll get a better one this time around.
I mean, that's something that's the sort of opportunity for a prequel show like this, right? Is something that the original series didn't do a great job of. You have the opportunity to go back and kind of fix, right? Give these characters some more, like flesh them out a little bit more, give them something more interesting to do. I think Dorne got short shrift in the original Game of Thrones. Would you agree that that's the case?
Yeah, they tried to shoehorn it in, I think. And like, I appreciate the effort, but it wasn't executed in a way that I found very satisfying.
Yes, indeed. So hopefully the Dornish get in the mix somehow. Now, of course... for all the names we've mentioned, there's a bunch of names we haven't mentioned, right, Kim? Here are the names from Game of Thrones that I think a lot of people will know. The Baratheons, the Starks, the Greyjoys, the Tyrells. What do you think? What do you think of all these houses? Do you think we're going to see these? Like, what was the state of these houses at this time? Do you know, or is it written about?
My understanding is that they were, you know, operating their respective corners of the kingdom without much issue or problems. And I think because of the way that Fire and Blood is told, because it's specifically focused on like a Targaryen history, the people, the fictional characters that George has come up with giving the accounts don't really feel the need to mention them unless they mm-hmm. enter the story in a specific way. So again, the showrunners for House of the Dragon have the room and the leeway to bring up some of these houses if they want to. But so far we haven't gotten confirmed casting on any of them. And so it's kind of like a wait and see. Maybe they'll do like, you know, how like the Star Wars prequels these days love to like surprise us with like a familiar face. Unfortunately, none of the characters that we know are alive, but like, yeah, we might see like the descendants of the Starks or maybe some random mention of a Baratheon here or there to kind of hint at the fact that the Baratheons will eventually be responsible for fully usurping the throne from the Targaryens. So it's possible, but so far we don't know. So I would go into this show really just expecting a Targaryen heavy experience, and then like everything else is sprinkles, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a shame, because those houses I named are probably the characters and the houses that people are most familiar with other than the Lannisters, right?
Yeah.
In Game of Thrones. So,
yeah.
So they're really kind of going they're putting all their money on all their chips on the Targaryens, and hopefully it'll be interesting enough to sustain the whole show.
Yeah.
Are there any other things that you think people should be looking out for when it comes to House of the Dragon and what people might need to know? Like, as we're recording this, we have not seen the first episode yet of House of the Dragon, right? So
right.
Probably after we see the first episode, you're going to be like, okay, here's like a ton of context you need to understand what just happened, right? But before we get to that point, I'm curious if there's anything else that you've been thinking about as we're getting close to the premiere date.
I am very curious to see like what tone they decide to take with the show. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think Game of Thrones was for the most part very adept at being like funny in a, as well as devastating. Like mm-hmm. you get a lot of wit from characters like Tyrion and the kids and all of like those fun dynamics, but then there were also, you know, serious apocalyptic threats of White Walkers and murder and all that jazz. And so The Dance of the Dragons is I don't know if I would say it's worse than some of the things that we saw happen in A Game of Thrones, but it gets pretty dark, and I'm curious to see if they're going to try and like stick with that formula of Game of Thrones of like a mix of levity with all the drama, or if they're going to go like full very self-serious palace intrigue type of stuff. I'm curious about that. And then again, like the pacing, I'm really curious to see how they decide to let the story unfold and if they're going to take advantage of the fact that they can come up with all of their sort of like own intricate storylines and really invest that time into it. I feel like everyone's doing limited series these days. So I kind of I would love multiple seasons of this show if it's good, but like it'll be interesting to see how they've decided to structure it.
Yeah. Your preference would be, let's take our time and go through each of these events in detail versus speeding through to the Civil War like in one season, right?
Right. Like, I don't need epic battle episode every single time. I think the reason why those episodes were so satisfying in Game of Thrones was because there was like an 8-episode buildup to the showdown. Mm-hmm. And like you said, some of my favorite scenes are just two characters talking in a room. We don't need nonstop dragon fire CGI mania for it to be a success, or at least in my mind. So yeah, we'll see.
I think there is this temptation on the part of many prequels to take something that used to be both fun and serious and then just take the serious parts.
Mm-hmm.
Right? To varying degrees of success. So I'm going to just throw out a bunch of examples right now, okay? Rogue One, Better Call Saul. Ghostbusters Afterlife, another one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's three things. Those three things are kind of like either reboot, well, Rogue One and Better Call Saul are prequels, and Ghostbusters Afterlife is kind of a reboot,
yeah.
But with like a younger crowd. But those are all things that kind of took their predecessors like deathly seriously and with great reverence.
Mm-hmm.
But like I would say mostly are serious things. Yes, like Better Call Saul has moments of levity, Ghostbusters Afterlife has moments of levity, but like in Ghostbusters 1, they're plumbers basically, right? And mm-hmm. like that was what was funny. It was like they're plumbers but ghosts, and Ghostbusters Afterlife is like treats all these things as though they're holy, you know?
Mm.
Rogue One is the prequel to one of the most famous movies of all time, but that was ultimately a movie featuring space wizards with laser swords intended for kids. And it's like, but what if incredibly, you know, it's all about her and her dad and him trying to like fight against the Empire. And it's like, I like all these three things to varying degrees. You know, I think Better Call Saul is a work of genius. I really liked Rogue One. I wasn't as huge of a fan of Ghostbusters Afterlife, but like, I think they all kind of do the same thing in some ways, which is, what if the thing that came before was like incredibly holy and serious and like, let's take it extremely seriously. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
Yeah.
I think that like, you should have fun with the source material and you should like keep that tone. And from what I've seen of the trailers of House of the Dragon, it seems like it's going to be pretty freaking serious. What do you think, Kim?
I agree with you that like the trailers have really only given us that very serious impression so far. But I also, when I think about like almost every trailer for Game of Thrones.
Right, for Game of Thrones. But the problem is, right, like is there going to be a Tyrion Lannister-esque character in House of the Dragon? Like Tyrion Lannister provided so much of the comic relief, you know, the humor of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
With his like witty retorts and everything like that. Like, do you think there's going to be a Tyrion-esque figure in this show or any that you might know of?
Yeah, the character I'm really excited to see is Daemon Targaryen, who is King Viserys's brother.
Mm-hmm.
And that means he's also uncle to Rhaenyra, who is in the line of succession. And he's being played by Matt Smith.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh, like that casting was very intriguing to me. And he's like, he's described in Martin's textbook or Martin's text as dashing, daring, and dangerous. And he's kind of like the wild card element where I could see him being almost like a Jaime Lannister and
Tyrion Lannister, like,
or like Euron Greyjoy.
Right. Like, kind of kind of snarky alpha male type.
Yeah. Like
the Joss Whedon from Avengers mold of, you know, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious about that. Also, I don't know. Again, it's like they might throw in characters that I'm not expecting or someone. I mean, yeah, it is. There's not a very like obvious witty character to me yet. But again, that's because we don't have the advantage of having a lot of dialogue in these stories that we have been shown. So
I see. Oh, so in the Fire and Blood book, like there's not that much dialogue, you're saying?
No, not a lot. It's mostly
Another huge difference with Game of Thrones, right? Like
totally.
Game of Thrones, tons of dialogue. Fire and Blood, not that much dialogue.
Totally.
Princess Rhaenyra Targaryen is played by Millie Alcock, right? In House of the Dragon. She's been in a lot of the trailers. I just think she has such a distinct look. Do you know what I mean? Like she just doesn't. She just looks really interesting, and I'm like, a lot of charisma in that character. I'm like, I want to know what that person's deal is, you know, when I see that character.
Yeah, so that's another thing I should mention, because Millie Alcock plays young Rhaenyra.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's Emma Darcy, I believe.
Yes, plays Princess Rhaenyra as well. So presumably we're going to see this character in two different time periods then.
Yes. So what's interesting is, again, I don't know if people mind like spoilers for the general premise, but yes, I think that we are going to see multiple characters like about 10 years apart. Mm. I want to guess. Again, they might mess with the timeline because they did that in Game of Thrones 2, so that it wasn't like a lot of children having sex. It was like, oh, they're supposed to be 18 now instead of 14. So they might do the same thing. I don't know what the gap is that they're going to provide. But yeah, she is a very striking character. And again, like, we got to sit with Daenerys Targaryen for so long and really see her embody this mother of dragons and this queen figure. And Rhaenyra is one of the only Targaryen women in history besides Daenerys who achieved a level of power like that. Mm. And so I'm excited to see her character. I mean, of course, you know, it's a bit timely as well with like the way that she's able to or not able to form alliances with men who believe that they might have a right to her throne, or that they believe that someone else, they're going to back someone else in this fight. So yeah, I'm stoked to see how that unfolds. And again, just to see more, like, Daenerys was always so isolated, obviously, mm-hmm. in every sense of the word. And aside from, like, I don't know, what was the overlap of time where she knew that Jon Snow was a Targaryen with her? Like, a few weeks of existing with another mm-hmm. Targaryen on Westeros who wasn't her brother?
We didn't see her surrounded by other Targaryens for an extended period of time. And when she was, like, it was disastrous for one of them.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, hey, this is still going to be a pretty disastrous civil war. But with a lot more time to just see the Targaryens really being, really dominating the political field in a way that we just didn't get to see at all in Game of Thrones.
It'll be pretty interesting because the Game of Thrones did change actors for the same character between seasons, but never within the same season, right? If I recall correctly. I remember towards the end with the Tower of Joy and stuff, you would see, I think, young Ned, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Like a different actor playing young Ned. But other than that...
And we saw a young Cersei at one point in a flashback.
Oh, right. Yeah. She was like a girl, basically, right?
Yeah.
And
Hodor.
And Hodor, right. But like usually not within the same season. It was, let's put it this way. I think it was relatively rare to do that in Game of Thrones. So I'm curious, like maybe they'll play around with the timeline. Maybe we'll like see like different sections in time, you know, like maybe a single episode could cover, you know, young Rhaenyra and then like older Rhaenyra and, you know, in the same episode or like alternating episodes, you know, you'd see like one episode that's dedicated to younger Rhaenyra, another episode dedicated to older Rhaenyra. It's possible, right?
Yeah, for sure. Or like, I wonder if they're going to do like every episode has like a cold open flashback or something to like something that's relevant.
Better Call Saul style. Yeah. Like the Cinnabon, right? Like every episode there's like a older Rhaenyra section, but then you go back to like younger Rhaenyra or something like that. So.
Right. So they, I'm not sure yet if the way that they've decided to structure it will be like flashbacks or if they're just going to do like the pilot episode is all of the younger, like the younger timeline. And then they jump ahead for episode two. That, like, I could see that.
Yeah, it could be linear, right? Yeah. So anything's possible.
Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, as we're recording this, anything is possible. It could be any of those outcomes. Anything else we haven't thought of, Kim? I think that's a pretty good, go ahead.
The only other thing, which again is just like, it's like a production detail, but I am so excited because Ramin Djawadi is back as the composer for the show. They didn't bring back all of the sort of like behind the scenes crew. It's like, I'm pretty sure it's a different costume designer this time around. But the fact that Ramin's music is going to be there and that, cause like, I mean, his Targaryen focus scores for Dany were always amazing. And I think it's pretty cool that he's going to get to like expand his catalog into like new families. Like I'm assuming like the new families that we're going to meet in the new houses will have like their own theme music in the way that like the Starks had a very distinct theme. Versus like the Lannisters, et cetera. So that's like one detail that made me like that much more excited to kind of to see what they decide to do with this, because at the very least, we're going to get some bangers off that soundtrack. So
yeah,
I'm stoked.
Agreed. I will also say, I think it's a bold decision to set the show so far in the past, because it cuts off the possibility of having like fan servicey connections to the characters we already know. Right. None of the characters we know from Game of Thrones existed at this point, except maybe what, the Night King? Like,
yeah.
who like no one we know was alive at this time, right? And that's something I think a lot of shows lean on, is like, oh, you're going to get to see the thing that you knew, you know, like there's a man out there, they call him the Strider, you know, or something like mm-hmm. that, where it's like, it's a you know, a reference to, it's the thing I saw from the later movie. And they're basically not going to have the chance to do that in this show, mm-hmm. as far as I can tell, right? Like, there might be references to dragons and eggs and Targaryen, but like, it's hard to see how they're going to bring in anything that we know from Game of Thrones universe, other than like house names that we already knew, right?
Yeah, and objects like that dagger that I mentioned, swords and that sort of thing. But yeah, no.
But it's like a handful of those things. It's not going to be like 50 of those things, you know?
No.
So it's going to be like a handful of elements that we already knew. And so I think it's a bold move. There was another, wasn't there? There's like a Nicole Kidman Game of Thrones spinoff that also like went to pilot and got rejected, if I recall correctly, right?
It was Naomi Watt.
Naomi Watt, sorry, I apologize.
Hey, I mean, yeah. Now that you say that, I'm like, they do look kind of like, yes.
My bad.
So
yes.
That was interestingly the first one that they greenlit for a pilot. They didn't greenlight the whole season. They filmed a pilot. There are basically no details as to like what it was that wasn't working with that led them to scrap it. But in the same day that we got the news that they were scrapping that idea, they greenlit House of the Dragon for a full 10-episode season.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought
mm-hmm.
that was really interesting. I was like, huh, like not even going to try a pilot first. Like
they're like, we already learned all of our lessons from canceling this expensive pilot. Like,
maybe
straight to series, baby.
Or maybe it was like so such an unbelievably perfect pitch and script that they were like, no questions. Here's a bunch of money. But
so you have no idea. Like, do you know what time frame that show would have taken place in?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was supposed to be centered around the Long Night, which was like a thousand, way longer in the past, like way, way, way back farther in the past mm-hmm. from the events of Game of Thrones. It would have been around
the show was
the
called
time.
Blood Moon, by the way, was the name of the show.
Yeah, right? That was like the working title.
Yeah.
And like the Long Night, which was basically when the White Walkers had last come mm-hmm. to Westeros and like taken over. So that would have been like super lore heavy and like showing us sort of like this big mythological time period in Westeros brought to life, which I thought was cool, but also just like random. I was like, huh, why?
It sounds like it would have been more like fantasy show, basically, right? Like,
yeah, no palace intrigue, really.
Apparently, like Children of the Forest would have been a big part of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would have been more fantasy. But yeah, it's interesting that with both of these projects, they leave themselves pretty much no possibility of Cersei showing up and being like, oh, hey, it's Cersei. You know, like
mm-hmm.
there's none of that that's going to happen, which I think is like pretty bold. You know, most prequels at least open the possibility that you're going to get to point at the screen and be like, I know that guy, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's not going to happen. Not going to happen with this. Don't expect to do that for House of the Dragon. So.
No.
All right. Well, yeah. Hopefully, listener, that gives you what you need to get psyched up for House of the Dragon and A Cast of Kings. What this podcast is going to be doing, bringing you recaps of the show every single week for the entirety of the season. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of A Cast of Kings. We are so grateful to have Kim Renfro's expertise for this upcoming season of House of the Dragon. You can find more episodes of this podcast at GameOfThronesPodcast.com. Email us at acastofkings@gmail.com. And again, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever your podcasts can be found, because we will be recording another breakdown of all the stuff that we have learned this week, including the new trailer, some stories that have hit some publications like Entertainment Weekly. We'll have a lot more detail in the next couple of days. So be sure to subscribe. Kim, thank you so much for chatting with me today. It has been a delight.
Thank you. I can't wait to talk more.